Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome back, folks. We've spent a lot of time on this show talking about revitalization efforts throughout the city. None can be more important than our downtown center. And we've talked about, not only in this city, but in other cities in the aftermath of the pandemic, what has actually happened and what that actually left behind in many respects as it relates to office buildings and the like. And the experience set here is not any different than we've seen in other cities. And we have an opportunity to revitalize, to re-engineer ourselves. And as we watch some of the changes on Canal Street, some have been problematic and some are going to be a huge challenge. But there's hope. Sandra Herman joins us, president and CEO of Celebrate Canal Coalition, to talk about the revitalization efforts that they've been involved in for a while now and what we can expect in 2026. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you, Neil.
So, Sandra, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, kind of give us a background from your perspective, what you've seen like maybe over the last 10 years as it relates to Canal Street and where we find ourselves today.
Well, for decades, people have been talking about doing something about Canal Street because so many New Orleanians remember when it's in its golden age. And unfortunately, after the major department stores moved to the shopping centers, and it left a vacuum, and that vacuum began to be filled with the less desirable shops. And so that continues to get worse unless and until we decide to take decisive action to put together a coordinated plan to go big on Canal Street. So 1 year ago, it was suggested to us by Michael Heck that a citizen-led initiative is the way to get something done on Canal Street. So we launched August the 14th of 2024, and we decided the first thing that we would do is get the public involved. I have 20 years experience in state government where I put together several big projects. And the way to do that is to have the public behind you when you go forward to the big guys and ask, or women, and ask for the money. And so we sponsored, in fact, a year ago when we started, all we heard about Canal Street was crime and decay. So we decided that we would get locals to come back and just see that perception is reality. It's, you know, we're out on Canal Street every day and it's wonderful. So we sponsored 7 major events, public events, free, open to the public. We had hundreds and hundreds of people come back. And according to the data of Downtown Development District, we had 100,000 more local visitors to Canal Street during our time period promoting the street. We also got, using Gamble Communications, an additional, this is showing me, because I moved here 15 years ago from Baton Rouge, how much the people want this. The media has given us 70 public interviews, newspapers, all television stations, magazines, all positive. And so now everywhere our team goes, we have people coming up to us and saying, we love what you're doing on Canal Street. How can I help? And that's exactly what we needed. So, you know, when we started out, I was under the impression, you know, let's bring this grand old lady back and put her some new clothes on. But the more I got into it, and during the past year, I studied all the previous plans that have been done, and there have been quite a few very expensive plans done that were just put on the shelf. And so I said, let's take the best ideas from these plans, but let's study revitalization in other cities, and let's try to put something together that's uniquely New Orleans. And so after a year of studying this, we have come up with a plan, and we're announcing it now, and we're excited to share it with you.
Absolutely. When we look at some of these challenges, though, from my perspective, I find that some of them are low-hanging fruit. You know, it's just kind of executing on some small things, lighting being one. You know, in fact, I've called the city many times of the lighting around the Sanger. You know, we have a beautiful theater there, one that's world-renowned. And for the longest period of time, I think that, you know, they've replaced some of the lighting, but they're probably should be additional lighting, because I get people ask me all the time, is it safe for me to go down to the Sanger? I'm like, yeah, I go down there all the time. I drive, I park in one of the lots, walk down there. I don't feel at risk at all. And the thing I hear is like, well, it seems like the lighting is so dim. And, you know, since the Hard Rock event across the street, it seems that the lighting is a little dim in that area. Your thoughts?
Well, I did go to one performance this past year, and when I walked out, I was really amazed. It felt like daylight right outside the Sanger. So I made the comment to people, maybe do this following the performances. And people, there was still some construction going on the road between the Ritz and the Sanger, and we had to walk around some construction, and that wasn't well lit up. But right outside the Sanger. But exactly, we need to do all of those things, but that will not be transformative. That will not be catalytic projects that will get the critical mass necessary to do revitalization. We visited Tampa.
I didn't mean to imply that it would, but I think what happens, I agree with everything that you've said thus far. I believe that if there's going to be something transformational, it comes from the public. It doesn't come from political leadership. It's you and your organization and others getting behind something and demanding certain things to happen. Having served as a public official for a number of years and studied it, I believe that more now than ever. Because politicians are political animals. They're not willing to consume political capital. Unless, you know, everybody's all in. And the best way to get them all in is to work with organizations like yours.
Oh, that's wonderful. I agree with that. And I think it's fortunate that we have a governor who, well, let me give you a little bad news to start with. I'm looking at a chart, and I'll send this to you, done by the U.S. Census Bureau. And for the years 2020 to 2024, it lists every city in the United States, all 50 states. In the top 20 of those losing the most population, all six of our cities are in the top 20. No other state has that many. The only two cities we have in Louisiana that did not lose population, Lafayette gained 2% and Baton Rouge gained 1%. The rest of these lost huge amounts. And I'm talking Lake Charles and New Orleans are 1 and 2. Houma, Thibodaux, number 4. Alexandria, number 13. Shreveport, number 14. And Monroe, number 18. So we need to do dramatic things to get the people to stay here. And so, Governor, the good news is, Governor Landry, you know, it was kind of stunning. If you grew up like I did, you know, I'm a farm girl from Northeast Louisiana, and where we read that he is giving $600 million to Hyundai to build a car manufacturing plant in Donaldsonville, which I think that's wonderful. He's giving $800 million and probably more to the Meta plant up in Richland Parish, which is incidentally where my maternal family farm is, and I spent much time up there. So those are very rural areas. What we need is incentives to get big investors here in New Orleans. We are the economic engine of the state. And without New Orleans, someone joked and said, we're Mississippi with bad beaches. We need New Orleans. New Orleans is the, in fact, Canal Street is the front door and the public face of the state. People know Canal Street. They know New Orleans. So incentives will work here. So we need to put together five major projects. Now, I have done some studying. I do have an MBA from LSU that I got in 2003, so it's been a while. But I know that to put these deals together, you have to have young I say young because, you know, when you get to older people, they have been burnt out so many times, and many times they'll say, oh, that won't work. We tried that. Can't happen. You get young developers who have actually done projects like Jason Seedman, who has done four or five here in New Orleans, including the Columns and a few others. They know how to put together financing packaging. And in fact, one of the advisors that I'm working with is Frank Rabelais. He is the CEO of a private equity firm in Tennessee. He has sent me lots of great information about putting financing packages together, because even when we go and we're looking forward to meeting with Governor Landry and his assistants to see and convince them that major investments on Canal Street will cause a ripple effect and will get other big investors to come in. And we found that out in Tampa. We found that out in all of these other areas. We have to incentivize them. So going back to Michael Heck, there are three things to convince the powers that be that you deserve an incentive. Number one is, without the incentive, it would not happen. And so, for example, we're looking at the 400 block of Canal, which is on the river end. If you know this area, it's across the street, catty-cornered from Canal Place, next to the casino. There's nothing there except a few little shacks that, you know, have souvenirs and that kind of thing. We're envisioning something big there, and we met with the property owners, and they're on board. First of all, it's all privately owned. So we have to work with the private property owners. We have to convince them to buy in, put in their own money, and help us put the deals together. So we've got several projects on the river end. What we can do there is that we can only go seven or eight stories. We don't need any more hotels. We have enough hotels, but right now the market demand on Canal Street does not convince the bankers to invest in a project. For example, we're going to say, to get an incentive of us or the state or the city or our coalition, you're going to have to develop at least a $100 million project. Now, that is big money in my eyes. It's shocking. But that's what an average big-time project costs to build any big building. And we want to do five of these. So my thinking was we go and we get incentives of $20 million each And so that would be a total of $200 million. Sounds like a lot, but it's nowhere near the $600 million that were given away to Hyundai, or the $800 million to a billion we're giving to Meta. And what it will cost, that's not the end of it. $20 million sounds like a lot of money. But if you're looking at a $100 million project that is going to return $2 billion in investment, you're just starting the work. You've got to put together a banking loan. You've got to put together tax credits. You've got to put together opportunity zone deals to make all of this happen. So we will just be beginning our work if we get the incentives. If we don't get the incentives, it will take longer, but we have to go to these big companies that are involved in revitalization and around the country that are now making a lot of money on revitalization, and persuade them that New Orleans is ripe for the calling. Every time there's a Super Bowl here, you hear the NFL officials and other people who visit say there's so much potential here. Why don't they do something to get it going? And so this plan that we've come up with covers the river to Claiborne and starts out with five major projects that we will announce all together, because you can't do one at a time. Look at the past 10 years. The Ritz, you've had the Sheraton, you've had Sazerac House, but they were all one at a time. And it didn't create enough momentum to tell people that New Orleans is serious about revitalization and is ready to put their hat in the ring and say, come here and work with us. So that's what we're looking at.
Well, I love that approach, because success breeds success, and the closer in period of time that you can have each project reach, you know, level of completion and fruition, just creates a multiplier effect of momentum, which is huge. And it's amazing how much emotion actually drives a lot of what's happening here, right? And it seems like y'all have a great strategy to try and embrace and trap all of that emotion together at one time and moving forward. Best of luck to you guys in dealing with the governor and his administration and Susan Bourgeois with LED. They seem to be very aggressive and have been. I interviewed Susan this past Thursday, and they have a lot of announcements coming our way in the first quarter of 2026 that she said are going to be incredibly exciting. And hopefully one of those in 2026 will be Celebrate Canal. So best of luck to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you very much. That's Sandra Herman, President and CEO of Celebrate Canal Coalition. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we return, we'll visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll talk about the Saints-Buccaneers game.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. the scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. The New Orleans Saints defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-20. Jeff, welcome to the show.
We did it. We can all go home now, right? Like we're happy.
I don't know about you, but you know, we have these conversations every week. I felt good about what I saw on the field. I saw a lot of energy. I saw a lot of physicalness. I saw a lot of hard work going on. And I saw strategic things happening on the field that made sense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I come on here every Monday, and I kind of sound like a broken record in that, like, yeah, I get it, they're losing games. But, you know, you watch this team operate. You watch them in the locker room, and they don't behave like a losing football team. Like, you don't see the sniping. DeMario Davis kind of talked about it yesterday. Like, you don't see these storylines that you'll often see coming out of other markets when things go bad and, you know, there's just negativity and all this bad stuff going on. Like, and you see these performances. Like, they go out to Carolina in a division game against the team that's now tied for the division lead, and they play probably their best game of the season. They go out to Tampa in an environment which I can attest was miserable, and
it looked
put up
miserable.
That type of performance, right? Like, you don't play that type of game if you're not doing things the right way. If guys aren't locked in, you know, it would be really easy to just be like, why are we doing this? You know, and they're professionals, I get it. Like, but there's just human nature. You're eliminated from playoff contention. You got to find motivation somewhere else, and they did that. So. Now, there's a lot to like about how this culture has been built with Kellen Moore. There's questions, obviously, in terms of some of the decision-making and some of the execution and, you know, whether they have the right players in certain spots. But you can't question that the team is committed and the team feels like this is how they need to play. And, you know, if they continue to play with that type of effort and energy and execute, put points on the board, they'll win more games. So it was cool to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I was, as you and I have talked about, as long as they're competitive, I'm there, right? And I just saw a competitive environment, a competitive feel out on the field. Shuck, the quarterback, that ball looked like it was so wet. It looked like it weighed 20 pounds. And then when you threw the ball, it was moving in slow motion. I mean, you probably know better than most. I'm sure you're still drying out.
Yeah. My socks were wet, you know, and it didn't end either. It was an interesting night because, you know, they're trying to fly home and there's all these thunderstorms. They had to wait about 3 hours to take off. And so, I mean, the state of Florida is just rejecting the Saints. Like I don't think they want to go back there anytime soon, but they just play well when they go. I mean, that's the fascinating thing about that stadium is the last 8 times the Saints have gone there, they've won 6 of their games and the 2 losses. One was last year. They led by 10 at halftime, and another was in 2021, the Andy Dalton Saints, and they were up 16-3 with 5 minutes to go, and Tom Brady pulled a comeback out of his hat. So for whatever reason, you go there and you win games, so I'm sure they didn't mind it. But no, Tyler, it was the important thing for that game, and this is what I was talking about going in, it's like when you have weather like that and you have a game like that, you got to run the ball. And it's been the biggest issue for the Saints this year is they haven't been able to establish the run. They've gotten one-dimensional. You're asking young quarterbacks to be put into situations where young quarterbacks don't excel, which is, you know, pass heavy. I mean, last time the Saints played the Bucs, Tyler Shuck came in the third quarter and threw the ball 30 times. Like, you can't do that and expect to win games. So they were able to run the ball. And I thought Devin Neal, like, everyone's going to come out talking about Tyler Shuck, but I was equally impressed with Devin Neal. It's like rookie quarterback, running back who's been asked to take over a workhorse role, which is not something that you expected because you would have thought at this point, hey, if Alvin gets hurt, you got Kendre Miller. Well, Kendre's out too. And, you know, no one's really talking about him because he's just handled it incredibly well. He's picking up hard yards. He had the first 20-yard rush of the season for a Saints running back, which, you know, good for him. That 3rd-and-8 conversion where Tyler just found him and he created something out of nothing for a first down, that was huge. That was right before the touchdown run by Tyler, the scramble. I mean, if you don't convert there, you're kicking a mid-range field goal with Charlie Smith, who has already missed one from that range. Like, there's no guarantee you make that, and you're kicking to take a 3-point lead instead of taking a 7-point lead. So, no, I mean, I think just, it wasn't the prettiest of games, right? Like, no one's going to put that on a highlight reel and say, wow, look at all this incredible passing attack the Saints had. But it was just a hard-nosed kind of smash-mouth game, and you got to play it the right way. And I thought the Bucs played it the exact wrong way. The idea that they came out of halftime throwing in the hardest rain of the day, it just boggled my mind. Like, what are you doing? The Saints were kind of stuffing up the run, but once the Bucs figured out, hey, we should run the ball, they scored immediately. And a lot, give Alante Taylor credit. He took that interception, and that really kind of set the tone for the second half. But no, I mean, I think the Saints, you know, they're not going to get a top three pick because they're going to be competitive and they're going to try to win these games. And, you know, and you have to, and I think that's important because, you know, you can talk about draft picks all day long and all, you know, we talked about this, like, hey, you can add all the draft picks you want. You're still a team that can't win games with a better draft pick. Like, I think any team that understands how to build a culture knows, like, winning, learning how to win in seasons like this is a lot more important than figuring out how to get the number one overall pick.
And I think it's even highlighted by the fact that you have a young quarterback, right? So,
oh yeah,
it can't be that we're going into the draft and the draft is going to be the panacea for everything. I'm not so sure that the draft has ever been a panacea for anything relative to this organization in and of itself. It's been a collective effort of bringing folks in, you know, managing salary cap. Sometimes we've done it well, sometimes not so well. I don't know exactly where we stand now, but you know, the higher you are with the draft picks, the more salary cap consideration you're going to have, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think you have to draft well to be a contender long term, but I do think you're right in that picking in the top three is not some kind of guarantee that you're going to get a superstar quarterback. I mean, think about Baker Mayfield, right? The Browns felt great when they brought him in, and the Bucs feel great about Baker Mayfield, but they didn't draft him. The Browns drafted him. Yeah. The Browns are still searching for that quarterback. Like, it's losing teams lose games, and it doesn't seem like picking in the top three year after year really does that, because there's still an element of luck, and you got to develop those players at the same time. And here's the thing, if you feel like you have the quarterback, you can draft anywhere and feel good about it. I mean, like if you feel like Tyler Shuck is the guy you can build around and you end up picking eighth, you can still find weapons at the number eight draft spot. And you can do a lot of things because, and I think we've talked about this before, like you either have the quarterback or you're looking for the quarterback. You're either one of those two things. And once you feel like you have the quarterback, everything gets a lot simpler in terms of, okay, well now you get them weapons. Now you figure out, do you have the pieces in the right spots, and are there players that you can bring in that you think are falling because of positional value, right? Like, can you now go get a running back in the first round? You know, one of these really elite prospects, because you can pair him with that quarterback. Like, you don't want to be the team that drafts a running back without the quarterback. You don't want to be the Giants drafting Saquon Barkley for old man Eli, or you don't want to be the Falcons drafting Bijan for Desmond Ridder, a guy you're going to cut next year. But, you know, if you're the Lions and you draft Jahmyr Gibbs and pair him with Jared Goff, who's your long-term quarterback, and you have the offensive line, suddenly you have an elite explosive offense and a weapon. And Jahmyr Gibbs has been probably the best running back in the NFL this year. Maybe Jonathan Taylor has a case, but no, I just think the interesting thing is now there's almost too much attention on Tyler Shuck. Throughout the first four starts, it was kind of being ignored because the Saints are boring and he wasn't finding ways to win games. Like that Dolphins game, if they had won it, if Chris Olave catches that ball, this probably happens last week. Now there's a lot of attention on Tyler Shuck, and he's not going to be flying under the radar anymore. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that, because, you know, I looked it up this morning. You look at, like, okay, how did his first five starts stack up with, you know, Josh Allen's and Drake Mays, and I'll just say that they compare favorably. Let's put it that way.
I thought he managed the pocket very well too yesterday. you know, they had some breakdowns on the front line, not as many as what we've seen in other games, but I thought he managed the pocket very well and was able to get to a second instead of just a primary receiver to a second or third, you know, receiver in the scheme, which helped. And, you know, when you add the weather component to it, that's really difficult.
Yeah, and anytime you're down to your third string tackle at either side to end the game, yeah. And that's not what we're talking about coming out of it, you did okay in that regard, right? You know, he's probably, I think at this point, what you'd look at it and say is he's taken a few too many sacks. You'd like him to cut that number down, but they're not incredibly damaging sacks, right? Like, they're not strip sacks. They're not plays where you're losing 10 to 12 yards because you're trying to bail. You know, he's able to mitigate that, and I think he did that pretty well. The Bucs send a ton of pressure, and he hasn't really handled pressure as well as I'd probably like to see to this stage, but I do think he, you know, the rush was probably a little slower in this game because of the conditions. Like, everyone, yeah. You know, when you, it was almost like a snow game, like, where, hey, you see guys who, if you try to do too much outside of your frame, you're going to slip and you're going to lose traction. That field was a disaster. You know, Devin Neal, I thought, did a great job. Like running backs in those situations, you kind of have to just keep your feet inside your frame. Like, you can't get too outside. And I think the Saints just did a good job of handling that in general in a negative situation. But no, I mean, I think he is a guy who can handle pressure well. The 4-minute offense, I think, has been really impressive. You don't see that a lot from rookie quarterbacks. Like, a lot of times teams won't trust their quarterback. They'll just run three times and punt it right back. But, you know, both the last two Saints wins, obviously the Panthers and the Bucks, in both situations, you got the ball back in a one score game, needing to churn time off the clock. Against the Panthers, they ran it all the way down. They never gave the ball back. In this game, they were able to get a couple key first downs. You know, you trusted your rookie quarterback. He found Devon Vele twice, you know, and that forced the Bucs to burn all their timeouts. I would have liked to see them just run the ball there on that final play. I question that decision a little bit in 3rd and 11. I think it's probably on the quarterback to some extent. He was probably told, hey, don't take any risks here. Worst case scenario, kind of go down, run that clock. Instead, he tried to find Vele on a kind of ill-fated play, even if he caught it. And so I imagine that's probably a point of conversation in terms of those situations. But you still were able to force the Bucs to use all their timeouts, get the clock under 2 minutes, and give them the ball, forcing them to go the entire length of the field in 2 minutes without any ability to stop the clock. And so that's winning football, right? Like, that's how winning teams win games. And if you kick that ball back to him with 3 minutes to go, who knows what happens? It was also the first time all year that the Saints defense was put in a 2-minute kill the clock situation, and they got off the field in 4 plays, which it's pretty impressive. You know, their 5th 4th down stop of the day. So you got to give them a lot of credit as well.
The defensive backfield, I thought, played well, and in fact, their tackling yesterday I thought was a lot better. Again, I don't know if it's because the game was moving a little slower because of the weather or whatever it may be, but usually that presents challenges as well, right?
Yeah, I thought Jordan Howden really played well from a tackling perspective, especially early in that game. Like, yeah, you didn't see a lot of missed tackles. You saw some bad angles on the screen touchdown to Bucky Irving on the first drive for the Bucks.
Yeah,
they continue to have a little trouble. They're a very aggressive defense, the Saints are, and a lot of times that gets you a little further upfield and you can get taken advantage of there. So they got to improve on that regard. But I also, Kool-Aid McKinstry, you know, that hit on Chris Godwin to jar that ball loose, it's 4th and 1, 4th and 2 maybe. That's a conversion. Like, if he doesn't make that hit, they have a first down. It's a 17-17 game, and they're driving. Actually, I think they were ahead at that point. I can't recall exactly. But the Bucs have the ball near midfield. They're going in for a score, and instead, it's a turnover at midfield. That's basically a takeaway for Kool-Aid McKinstry. He's not going to get credit for it, but that's as significant as intercepting the ball, forcing a fumble. And so they just made plays. You know, and the Bucs, I don't think they executed where they needed to, right? I mean, Emeka Ebuka had the easiest touchdown he'll ever get, and he just put it on the ground. Godwin can't hold on to that key 4th down conversion. Kate Otten gets stopped in 6 inches short of the sticks on the final 4th down of the game. So, you know, it was just a game where the Saints ended up on the getting the breaks that seemed to have gone against them all year. So, you know, they'll probably say that's football karma working their way.
it was fun to watch. I'm very excited that the team won and they finally come back home for a two home game stand, if my memory serves. Yeah, the Panthers and the Jets at home on the 14th and the 21st. Late start for this weekend's game, 3:25 p.m. kickoff. And I know they're looking forward to being back home for sure, right?
No doubt. It would be nice to if Tyler can get his first win in the Superdome. So far, his two wins have come on the road. So it'd be nice for him to put on a show for their home fans for sure.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it and always appreciate you joining us. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Great job, Jeff, and look forward to talking with you next Monday.
Sounds good, Noel. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us, folks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
Yeah. I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, nothing says Christmas like smiles on children's faces. Thursday, you can join me at H2O Salon and Spa on Metairie Road. We'll be there to collect new toys, books, and donations for the U.S. Marine Corps' Toys for Tots program. Stop by, say hi, and bring an unwrapped gift or monetary gift on behalf of your family or business. Let's fill up the sidewalk with toys and gifts, and you can meet me there at H2O Salon and Spa right there at 441 Metairie Road, Thursday from 10 to 1. Be part of the hope, joy, and the spirit of Christmas on WWL. And every year we've been growing this program every year. It's been a lot of fun, and Holly and her entire staff at H2O, they really buy into this, and we really appreciate the effort that they put into it as well, and we look forward to seeing folks come on by. And last year and the year before, we've had an anonymous donor have a van pull up and just full, chock full. I don't know how many thousands of dollars of gifts that this, and I truly do not know who this person is, that they drop off every year, and we're so appreciative for that. It's just, it blows our mind when the van pulled up the first year, and then it did it again on the second year. It was great. We really appreciate the generosity of each and every one of the folks in our listening audience, because our listening audience makes a difference every single year. They did so for the Radiothon, and they'll do so again on Thursday. And the turkey fry with Kiwanis, Dawn Busters, and all that they do as well. We really appreciate that. So come on by, drop off a gift to make sure that all of our kids have something to open Christmas morning. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about the massive fraud case in Minneapolis. Over 77 people already indicted. The explosive growth and problems with SNAP, otherwise known as food stamps. Charitable giving in 2026. Boeing versus Airbus. And we'll also talk about auto mileage rules change and how the AP misstated the facts. We'll be back with more with Guy Williams when we return. This is Newell on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.